Hello, hello. Wherever you are, hope you're doing well. I'm David, your host for this episode of Footnotes, taking over from Alana and Vivian from last time round. Now, just to get something out of the way first, if me or any of the other guys at any point during this episode sound like we're talking from the bottom of a swimming pool, it's because we're recording this in June over Zoom, and that's because of a little-known event called COVID. Seriously, though, that's just one of the many, many impacts this pandemic has had on, well, everyone. As life seemingly starts to return to normal, at least in Australia, it's hard to deny that the world post-COVID-19 looks just a little bit different to the one we left behind. In between the virus, social distancing, and the public health measures put into place to prevent our medical systems from being overwhelmed, many, many facets of our society have been changed. And for some of those changes, they're going to be with us for a long time to come. Others say it's not only the virus we have to worry about, but also the laws that have been put into place that may impact the privacy and rights of many people right across society. Oh, not to mention, the pandemic's also caused significant disruptions to the legal industry. That's where we come in. We're a podcast that aims to help you sleep just a little bit better at night, safe in the knowledge that even if your civil liberties are being eroded, at least you know exactly which ones are being eroded. So, without further ado, welcome to Footnotes, sponsored by the very generous Gilbert and Tobin, a legal podcast run by students, for students, breaking down the complex legal industry one chat at a time.
First section for this podcast is social distancing laws. For this, I'm going to have Vivian and Llewellyn with me.
Hello, everyone.
Hey.
Hi.
So, let's talk about the two words that we never want to hear in our lives ever again. Social distancing. In New South Wales and all around Australia, we have been keeping 1.5 metres away in our grocery stores, footpath, and public spaces, and we can only leave our house for essential activities like exercise. Up until recently, failure to do so came with a hefty fine. Under the order of the New South Wales Minister of Health, Brad Hazard, leaving the house without a reasonable excuse could result in an on-the-spot fine of $1,000 and ultimately a court attendance notice fine of up to $11,000. I think there was this one bloke in Newcastle who was fined like $1,000, I think, for eating a kebab on a park bench, which is probably the most expensive kebab he's ever had. But, you know, that's the point. These things are absurd. They have pretty absurd effects. But also, although they are ostensibly for our own good and our own protection, the efficacy and indeed the necessity of these fines have been questioned. We've all seen those photos across social media of huge gatherings of people crowded in Bondi Beach and other affluent areas, blatantly ignoring the social distancing laws, yet data suggests that the number of fines issued there is incredibly small compared to those being handed out in areas of Western Sydney. What do you guys reckon?
Yeah, definitely. I think you do need large fines to kind of deter people from breaking those social distancing laws, but obviously they have a huge impact on people from lower socioeconomic areas. They have lower ability to pay these fines, whereas its purpose as a deterrent is obviously undermined in higher socioeconomic areas where people have more disposable income. Secondly, police are using high levels of discretion when enforcing these social distancing laws. As we've seen on the news, police can use implicit bias and target especially marginalized communities, and this obviously further institutionalizes discrimination.
Definitely, that's so true. This one stat I came across, I think, just illustrates the absurdity of it for me. In early April, only 2 of the 151 fines for violating lockdown rules were issued in the Waverley Council area. But in the northern New South Wales town, Coonamble, where a third of the population is Indigenous, a whopping 10% of New South Wales's infringement notices were issued, despite that town having no confirmed COVID-19 cases. Whichever way you cut it, I think there is definitely some disparity and it is incredibly, incredibly wrong.
There's a really good website for monitoring this police discretion. It's called covidpolicing.org.au, and people can actually report incidents of their encounters with the police. I've read so many anecdotes of the up there of police being hypocritical. They're not observing social distancing themselves while being really intrusive. Like, for example, during a Muslim funeral, where obviously with police watching over you, you can't properly grieve over the death of your loved ones. Yeah. Or even like police picking on young single women when the police are kind of ganged up in groups, kind of intimidating these women. So yeah, that's a really good, I think, community website for kind of the oversight of the social distancing police discretion.
Which does bring me to, I guess, the next thought I had. Regardless of what the motivation of the authorities are, there's always going to be some degree of overreach when you give authorities new powers. So I guess what I'm asking is, are these strict statutory enforcement regimes necessary, or were they necessary to curb the spread of COVID-19?
Obviously, some other countries have taken a much lighter approach in terms of legal enforcement of social distancing measures. One example I can think of is Sweden, in that they didn't actually legally enforce any of their social distancing policies, I believe. They merely advised the population of them and said, you know, it's up to you what you choose to do. And in part, the reason they chose to do this was to try and like create more herd immunity. For those of you who don't know what herd immunity is, it's basically like everyone or like a large percentage of the population gets the disease and builds up immunity to it. Obviously, mostly we do this through vaccine these days. Because causing everyone to be infected with a disease is a pretty grisly sort of approach. Brave, though, I would say. But the Sweden's chief epidemiologist has actually come out and said that he actually regrets such a light-touch approach, because it has obviously led to a much higher death rate, and apparently it hasn't actually led to that much of an actual herd immunity, so there's not that many benefits to that approach, apparently. Obviously, America, you know, attempted to have quite a heavy lockdown. But now that their economy was, like, you know, obviously going quite downhill, they've now given up on that. And
yeah,
it's quite kind of scary what's happening there, really, isn't it?
I know that a lot of people have been, you know, looking at ScoMo and saying, oh, he's done a pretty poor job. But when you sort of band together Australia and New Zealand and look at what the leadership has done, look at the sort of, I guess, tone setting they've done, and it's been quite good. You know, every single day they've gotten up there on the podiums and they've been like, wear face masks, don't go outside, you're saving lives, sending a quite a strong message. Mm. While in the States, you know, like, what the hell is Donald Trump doing? He's standing up there going, the whole thing's a hoax, you know, you don't need to listen to the scientists. Oh, I forgot the best one. What was that? He was going to inject into his arms?
Yeah, bleach, was it?
Bleach, yeah,
wow.
Bleach, I mean, Jesus Christ. In saying that, though, guys, you can only get so far with getting everyone to do the right thing. I mean, I've seen it, you know, people saying, look, I've toughed it out for 6-7 months, but if the country is going to lock me down for any longer than that,
yeah, definitely,
I'm going out. Right? And you sort of see it across the Western world. The COVID-19 pandemic is still a thing, but I think people are sort of just going, look, I'm going to cop the risk. I'm going outside. You can't keep me inside anymore.
Yeah, and I definitely think in Australia, sort of like the language has sort of changed, you know, as like the government has become aware of the, you know, the massive impact on the economy, that, yeah, people are sort of going now, okay, now it's time for us to get back out, get back into sort of our day-to-day lives. And obviously there are other ways to enforce behaviors other than legal measures, you know, through cultural norms, through basically just like public health messages saying, if you're going out, don't touch your face, you know, wear a face mask, observe the social distancing requirements on trains. So I think, you know, as we do move through the pandemic, they are moving towards a more perhaps, you know, lighter touch approach, which I think is sort of more appropriate in this time rather than at the beginning.
Speaking of the rules are no longer as strict anymore, what do you guys reckon about the Black Lives Matter protests?
I think they're really important. I actually attended the Sydney protest the other week. It was
wow.
I think it was quite a good event. You know, it was quite peaceful. Everyone were doing their best to observe social distancing practices. Basically, everyone I saw were wearing face masks. People were handing out hand sanitizer in the crowd. Now, obviously, from the government, there's been quite a strong message saying, you know, do not attend these protests. Find other ways to express yourself.
I'm, you know, of the opinion that this is quite overstated because they're saying don't attend these protests at the same time as, you know, obviously football stadiums are opening up with 10,000 people capacities and things like that. Although the government and the federal and state message has been these protests are a risk, the Public Health Association of Australia's chief executive, Professor Terry Slaven, I believe, did come out and say that the risk of attending such protests are relatively low at this point, keeping in mind the public health risk of, you know, obviously racism may pose a higher risk to people's lives at this point. So I do think it's, you know, obviously a bit disturbing that, you know, sort of our government is using these social distancing laws to try and suppress freedom of political expression. What do you think, Vivian?
Yeah, I think definitely ScoMo, maybe he's using it as a bit of a cover-up to kind of deny the history of slavery in Australia, as we've seen on the news. But I do think, on the other hand, like, these protests would not have gotten such a wide reach if coronavirus wasn't a thing. I think with, you know, the high unemployment rates, everybody being super bored at home, kind of scrolling through social media every, like, 5 minutes, without that, I don't think people would have paid as much attention to the Black Lives Matter protests. So I think, in a way, it's been good for that, because there's been so many Black deaths in custody throughout history, and none of them have reached the whole world on such a deep and wide level.